Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on 990 WDEO.
This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Wife, I was leaving the house today. She said, "Ray, your socks don't match." I looked down. I said, "Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They're the same thickness." I'm okay. I got the aardvark matched in with the giraffe. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is the Friday edition of The Doctor Is In. Look back Friday, where we take previous calls and we extrapolate. In other words, that's a fancy way of saying I talk a lot more about them, because we take the initial call, which usually brings up a number of issues that could be explored, a number of directions we could go, or it brings up a broader topic matter that I certainly would like to pontificate upon, but I can't, because when we're doing the calls at the time, there are other people waiting in line. So, as a result, I think I'd like to say more. I'd like to say more. I don't have a chance to say more. Well, Friday gives me a chance to say more. So we will deal with these calls. Number of good ones sitting up there. Andrew Kruchek, producer man, he takes care of them. Okay, I got to deal with this. I got a text from Cindy. I read this a few weeks back on the program. I said, it's springtime, it's baseball. One of the major differences between men and women is in the area of sports. I said, for example, if a woman has to choose between catching a fly ball and saving a child's life, she will save the child's life without even considering if there are men on base. Now, Cindy wrote and said, my husband and I didn't understand that at all. I had assumed that people were as sports conscious as I am. On a fly ball, a runner, after the ball is caught, can do what they say, tag up. In other words, if the fly ball is deep enough or the runner is fast enough, the ball can be caught and then the runner can take off. He can try to negotiate the next base. Typically, this happens from third to home. Well, if a woman has to choose between catching a fly ball and saving an infant's life, she'll save the infant's life. She won't even think about whether there's a guy on third trying to score. That was the point there, Cindy. Okay. You have to know who's on the base. Because sometimes it's wise not to catch it, especially if it's a foul ball. Now, I just confused you even more, didn't I? Why would she not catch a foul ball? All right, I'm not going to get into that too much. Diagnoses have a life cycle. You would think in the profession of psychology, and this is even true in medicine to some degree, when the media gets a hold of a particular diagnosis, it raises its profile. As it raises its profile, it becomes a more prominent diagnosis. Back in the 80s, agoraphobia, fear of the marketplace, what is now known as generalized anxiety disorder, was very, very high profile. It was everywhere. Women's magazines were doing stuff on this all over the place. Reactive attachment disorder is a name. It's not really a diagnosis per se, but it's a name given to sometimes the very difficult raising of an adopted child who's had a bad history.
Other high-profile diagnoses, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there's now evidence coming out that it's heavily overdiagnosed. But in large part, that is because it's becoming more prominent in the public consciousness. One of the things that I've been seeing an awful lot, by the way, another one is bipolar, especially among kids and teens. One of the things I've been seeing an awful lot is the rise in the diagnosis of autism, falling on the autistic spectrum, Asperger's disorder, kind of a variant of the autistic spectrum, kind of overlapping with pervasive developmental disorder. Okay, more and more people are saying, my son's being diagnosed with Asperger's. Somebody corrected me once and said it's Asperger's. Okay, I don't know. I claim ignorance on that. Or autistic spectrum. And it has, in numbers, seeming to have exploded. Why is this? Now, some people will say it's the vaccine link. Well, that link has been debunked. It came from a very, very, very questionable study, very limited. It probably couldn't even be called a study. The study itself has been essentially invalidated from many directions, and much, much closer scrutiny has found no, there just seems to be no link between vaccinations and autism. Okay, so here's the question. This comes from the Harvard Mental Health Letter. If you consider only certain statistics, you might conclude that children in advanced industrial societies are suffering from an epidemic of autism. Figures published by the U.S. Department of Education and based on the number of kids receiving special ed show an exponential. Do you know what exponential means? That's a mathematical term, basically explosive. Rises very, very, very quickly in the number of cases during the 1990s. However, a study published in the journal Pediatrics shows that these numbers are unreliable. And an English survey confirms that children born in 1998 are no more likely to develop autistic disorders than those born in 1992. Okay. The American data, this is the figures published by the U.S. Department of Education, collected under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, indicate there were 4 cases of autism per 10,000 kids in 1993. That's pretty low. And 25 cases per 10,000 in 2003, a 6-fold increase. Now, if you listen to the radio, you will hear advertisements, public service announcements, saying essentially that the rate of autism is 1 in 53. All right, let's take a look at this stat here. 2003, 25 in 10,000. That is, what is that? That's 1 in, looks like 1 in 400. 4 times 25 is 100. I think it's 1 in 400. Okay. 1 in 53 is 8 times that, roughly. What's going on here? What is going on here? Well, if you look more deeply into the numbers, you're going to see some inconsistencies. For example, as many children are being diagnosed for the first time at age 15 as are being diagnosed at age 8. However, the symptoms, what we call the autistic spectrum symptoms, appear before age 3. Why are you getting kids at age 15 being diagnosed with this? Well, maybe we just didn't know what we were dealing with. Maybe we finally discovered it. Maybe we finally realized. Maybe somebody savvy enough diagnostically came along. No, much more likely explanation is that the kid has developed either some social quirkiness, some struggles academically, those kinds of things that were interpreted as an undiagnosed autistic condition, but there was no evidence of this way back. This is a developmental disorder here. This is not a disorder that pops up at age 15. Also, the figures from the government show a drop in the number of new cases diagnosed between ages 11 and 12. Okay, is this artifact? What is going on here? I believe from a clinical perspective, and I've seen this anecdotally, we have taken the diagnosis of autism, we put it on a spectrum. Anytime you put anything on a spectrum, you have now broadened out its boundaries. And to some degree, you make those boundaries really, really fuzzy. They start to move out. When I studied autism in graduate school, there's a guy named Ivar Lovaas who had certain types of behavioral approaches to severely, profoundly autistic kids. I mean, these are kids, language was not there. These were kids who lived in a self-stimulatory world. This was severe brain damage type of pathology. Very obvious. Okay, these are kids who needed 24-hour care or institutional care. That is what was diagnosed as autism. That we didn't understand it. We didn't know how it came about. Right? And we still really don't. Best way to look at it is it's a very, very mixed bag of all kinds of pervasive sort of brain damage by all kinds of causes, sometimes unknown. So now what is happening is I'll get people who will talk to me, call me, come into the office, and say, my daughter's high-functioning autism. Well, what's her IQ? 124. 124? I mean, that's a very bright kid. Yeah, but she's quirky. Socially, she's kind of odd. Okay. So socially, she's odd. But her language skills are well within normal. She can function, for the most part, quite well. But she got an autistic diagnosis. How did this happen? See, I believe what is going on a lot in our culture is that at the same time we are, quote-unquote, broadening out the boundaries of certain types of diagnoses, we are narrowing our tolerance for kid behavior. You got a kid who doesn't relate well to other kids. He's a little odd, a little eccentric. He seems to be kind of, I don't know, caught up in his own sort of isolated world. Somewhat. I mean, the kid he's not in his bedroom spinning something for 27 minutes at a time. And we call that autistic spectrum, or we might call it Asperger's. Oh, okay, but what we're doing is that we're saying we're having less and less tolerance for the variety and the diversity of developmental behavior. We label it autistic. We label it autistic spectrum. The English study found that the diagnoses of autism, as well as pervasive developmental disorder, which is really autism in its broadest sense, they used a single consistent definition. And they found that the rate was about 6 per 1,000, and it stayed the same. Okay? So, in fact, that seems to lend credence to the idea that if you make the definition very specific, you don't have this explosion. But if you don't, if you start to fuzzy it out and broaden it out, more kids get captured under this ever wider umbrella. All right. When we come back, Doug from Michigan, he needs an apology. And I don't know if he's getting it when we come back.
The doctor is in.
The doctor is in.
The doctor is in.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
If you're a registered nurse with at least 1 year of experience in home care, has a strong desire to work with the elderly population, is very dedicated with flexible hours, come and join our team at John Paul Home Care. We have excellent packages for full-time and part-time positions, including highly competitive salaries. All interested parties are welcome to fax their resumes to 248-731-7562. That's 248-731-7562.
So when our journey is done, we all want to hear those words from our Lord. Well done, my good and faithful servant. And when you are in the service industry, you want your customers to define you as being loyal and trustworthy. That's why we pride ourselves on servicing our clients. We are a local company working to keep your systems running right. Hi, I am Ron Garmel with Running Right Heating and Cooling. During these days that are heating up, we want to keep your homes and businesses cool. Whether you need to service your existing air conditioning unit or if you need a new one altogether, we specialize in both residential and commercial HVAC. You can trust that we will get your systems running right and keep them running right. Mention this Catholic radio ad and get a 10% discount. Call us today at 248-884-1704 or go on our website at www.rrhvac.biz. We're working to keep your systems running right.
The Doctor Is In is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds, investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria Mutual Funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives, smart investing, and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Well, wow, that is not a happy high. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Delighted that you've taken a few moments to be with me. I have to be sensitive. I'm Italian, so I have kind of a darker skin, but I really have to be careful about the sunscreen. So I bought something that's labeled SPF. I don't know. I forget what SPF stands for. SPF 75. Sunscreen. So I squeezed the tube, and a wool sweater came out of it. That'll work. Doug from Michigan is essentially saying, okay, here's the deal. Let me find Doug here. I have a need for an apology. I do. Let's see why. Now, this apology that you need, is this a one time somebody did something and I sure wish they realized they did it wrong and they would apologize? Or is this a characteristic where you say, I seem to want people to apologize to me or to recognize their wrongness toward me, and that's a characteristic of mine?
Wow. Well, that's a good question. I think I am dealing with a lot of guy pride, and I want to overcome that. And so the question is, how do I do that without looking weak when I feel that there's two factors involved? The things that were said and done that hurt me, and my reaction, which was definitely not proper. Over angry, discontinuing visits. I mean, you know, my sister lives right down the road from me. I don't see you again, talk to you again, leave me alone. Because they, you know, counted me out of family things when my brother, who passed away a year ago, died. You know, when he was alive and would visit into the area, they would do things without telling me. It was very hurtful to me. Long story short, other things, too, that were done hurt me. But it was my reaction that caused the severance of any further gettings together of sorts, for lack of better words. And so I feel like, you know, there were things they did that hurt me. But I want to be responsible for my part in the reaction. How do I do that and ask for forgiveness for having reacted the way I did without looking weak like it condoned what they did that hurt me in the beginning?
You got about six questions in there. And this is your lucky day because this is multi-answer day.
I am prepared
All right.
to take your questions one at a time. First of all, regarding getting an apology from someone, psychology rule of life number 122, subsection A, paragraph B. Most of the time, when people have done something that in your eyes is apology worthy, they don't think so. Got that? So in other words, for you to say, I want them to recognize that they need to apologize for their hurtful wrongdoing, my guess would be, there's probably, I'm going to just estimate this roughly, 82.6534% chance that if you were to confront them with this, they'd look at you like, no, I'm not wrong. And I'll tell you why I'm not wrong. Here's why. So that's the first thing. Much of what we want people to apologize to us for, they don't think is necessary. Two, when you say somebody acts and really hurt me, what you're really saying is, I deserve to be treated with the utmost respect and consideration and fairness. I deserve that. And my question to you is a very simple one. Says who? Says you? Because the reality is, you're not always going to be treated with respect and thoughtfulness and fairness. As a result, you're going to get hurt. Because why? Well, they're not acting toward me in a right way. Okay, what's your point? Well, they're not acting toward me in a right way. Good, what's your point? They're not acting. Do you see what I'm saying here, Doug? You're getting all upset and hurt because they're acting wrongly. Well, I'm not here to debate you whether they are or they aren't. Maybe they are. The problem is, you getting hurt and all upset over it is basically saying, I should not be treated that way. And then I say to you, says who? Where is it written that you are to be treated well all the time? When you live with other human beings, you're not going to be. It's as simple as that. Doug said, how do I apologize for my conduct after I was treated badly in my eyes? A simple rule. The more you take offense at someone's conduct, the more you think they have no right to treat me that way. I deserve better. They're not fair. They're wrong. They're hurtful. They're not acknowledging my dignity. However you interpret what they've done to you as hurtful, you are more likely to respond nasty. Lash back. Angry. Throw a few doses of your own hurt in there. Retaliation. So, the first part of Doug's question regarding how do you apologize for what you did is that you don't have to apologize quite as much if you don't get as upset, and you won't get as upset if you don't demand that other people recognize the need to treat you with respect and fairness. Not saying it would be nice if they did, but you're not going to get it. That's one. And keeping in mind, it is a demand. It is not, I wish they would. It is, no, I demand that they do. And the more you demand, the angrier you're going to get. Now, a few years back, I wrote a book, Marriage, Small Steps, Big Rewards. In the book, I listed 10 tiny things you can do to dramatically improve your marriage. Then I spent 80% of the book talking about why you justify not doing them. One of the big justifications for an apology is that if I apologize, that will send the message to the other person that they were right and I was wrong. My point in undoing that justification was you are apologizing for your conduct. If they choose to interpret that as your admission that therefore in this whole Donnybrook you were 100% wrong and they were 0% wrong, well, you can't do much about that. But you, to do the good thing, would be to apologize for whatever it is you said or did, however you feel you were provoked into saying or doing it, and however much you think the main problem lies on their side. You won't apologize if you think that by an apology, as Doug says, that's weakness. It's not weakness. It's incredible strength. Being apologizing for what you think is your 7% of the problem and accepting that they're going to view it as you're apologizing because you're recognizing that you're really 93% of the problem? That's strength. That's not weakness. It's incredible strength. That's why most people don't do it. It takes an awful lot of emotional strength. All right. Who we got coming up here? Anxiety. Is this a learned thing, this anxiety stuff? How do you learn to get anxious? Sometimes you don't.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shield.
The Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. How many times do we say that? Unexpected death, unexpected serious illness, relationships broken, people fired from their work, just all kinds of things that can radically shift our lives. And the first thing we say is, the Lord has forsaken me, my Lord has forgotten me. Why would God allow this? God always brings good and, in fact, greater good out of our difficulties if we allow Him to teach us and we rely on Him and He walks us through the situation. We will gain wisdom of heart, and it's priceless. The Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. Hang in there when things are difficult and dark. Say, Lord, I trust you. I don't feel it, but I trust you. I make a decision to trust you, that you will bring good out of these very difficult circumstances. That's growing in faith, and God will bless it abundantly.
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey, weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Hello, this is Steve Ray, and I'm inviting you to join us on a historical journey through the beautiful country of Germany. We're going to study Martin Luther and argue with him a little along the way for the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. We ask you to join us as we go through this beautiful country. We visit Berlin and all the places related to the Protestant Reformation. It's a tour, an adventure, and a seminar all wrapped into one.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
No new age stuff here on the Doctor's Inn. Mostly dabbling in middle age or older. I better get to it quick. I got a hard break coming up in about 7 minutes, so let's go to Erin from Florida. She's talking about anxiety. Is this learned?
Well, I'm struggling because I have a darling three-year-old, and he struggles, or he has some medical issues, and so occasionally we have to do medical things that he doesn't like, and this is just part of what his life is going to be like, and he is cognitively perfect and very astute, and so he anticipates these things happening. Even though they don't happen every day, at a certain point in the evening, he anticipates, and no matter how many reassurances you give that nothing's going to happen, it's going to be fine, we don't have to do anything tonight, until you put his PJs on, which is the signal that nothing can happen now, he is in meltdown.
You want to put his PJs on at noon?
I kind of do, but sometimes I can't because sometimes we do have to do stuff. Or sometimes we want to go out in company, and he's getting to be old enough that PJs probably aren't appropriate.
I'm being facetious. You know that, Erin.
Okay. Well, the first thing you said, I hope I remember this correctly, you said something about no matter how much we reassure him and no matter how many reassurances, right?
Yes.
Okay, cut the reassurances. Boy, that doesn't sound like a psychologist, does it? It's like, oh no! Wait a minute, this is a little 3-year-old kid here, and this guy's telling me to not reassure him. Why did I say that, Aaron?
I'm anxious to hear.
Ooh, that's you're anxious. He's anxious. Aha! I'm starting to see a genetic connection here.
Except that he's adopted. Yes.
Oh, see, I'm wrong. This is the second time I've been wrong this year. Anyway, when you reassure him, this little bright 3-year-old probably says something like, oh gosh, I feel better now, Mom. Thank you. That's good now. I'm okay. Right?
Until he asks again in the next 30 seconds.
Exactly. The reassurance, all it does is keep it alive. So you give him a big kiss and you say, honey, Mommy's going to be right with you. Now, you could not tell him about what's coming. And if he asks, Mommy, am I going to get that? You know, you say, well, we'll have to see today, son. You play now. You don't have to prepare him. Maybe you're thinking if I prepare him, he'll have time to adjust, right?
Well, I struggle because the question comes just as you say, are we going to have to do that tonight? And sometimes because it does have to come, it's like, oh, we'll just have to wait and see, go play. But he won't. He won't take the direction. He just persists.
Well, you keep answering him. There's your problem. Say, Mommy's not talking about this anymore. And then he keeps badgering you. You almost have to not respond at all. Put your fingers in your ears and sing. I can't hear this. You are talking. No. You're not going to be insensitive. But at the same time, what's keeping his anxiety, if you want to call it that, Aaron, okay? What's keeping his anxiety going is that Mommy is always there to reassure, always there to interact, always there to talk about it, always there to try to sort through it. That's keeping it gone. He's never going to be distracted with play as long as he can continue to follow you around and pepper you with questions. A real antagonistic kind of direction on this. On one hand, when you have a child who is fretful, nervous, shook up about legitimate things, or who likes to get a shot, who likes to get an unpleasant intervention, the natural intent of us parents is to calm, to make the child feel better, to not worry, to not fret. Unfortunately, what tends to happen is that we keep the fretting alive, we keep the anxiety going because we're dwelling on this. My son Andrew was born with a cleft lip and palate. He had many surgeries, a lot of interventions, a lot of shots. There were times, and Andrew, he's a sensitive kid. So as a result, he worried about this stuff. He fretted about it. My wife and I would attempt to calm him, but there came a point where we had to make the medical intervention occur, whether it was a pill, whether it was a shot, whether it was the surgery upcoming, whatever it was, it had to happen. And we had to stop reassuring, and we had to more or less tell Andrew, this is what we have to do, son. This is for your good. And that was pretty much it. Of all of our children, there's an irony here, irony of life, number 124. Of all of our children, Andrew had the strongest aversion to needles. The idea of a shot just threw him for a loop. Several months prior to kindergarten, he asked my wife, will I have to take a shot for kindergarten? And my wife, being an honest, straightforward soul, said, yes, Andrew, there's times you have to take shots because they got to make sure you're going to be well for kindergarten. That's it. He fretted about that shot. He didn't want to go to kindergarten.
He fretted about that shot forever. We didn't talk about it. We finally just got to a point where he'd bring it up. And is there any way I can not have a shot? Do I have to get a shot? What if I don't go to kindergarten? And there was a point where we just didn't talk about it anymore. Where's the irony? When Andrew was 19 years old, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. For several months prior to his being able to go on a pump, he had to give himself several shots per day. Initially, when we were in the hospital and he had to give himself his first shot, I saw his terror. He went through it. He did it. And he got to the point where he realized, I just have to do this. This is something I have to do. But a certain irony there. And I will tell parents, at some point, you stop the ongoing reassuring reasoning, because what the child is really saying is, get me out of this. I don't want to go through this. Let's find a way for me to avoid this. And if you know that this is definitely in the child's best medical interests, then it's got to happen. And the more you recognize that and you don't dwell on it and you send the message, I'm here with you, I'm going to be right beside you, but we're not going to keep over talking this. What'll happen is, believe it or not, you'll have less anxiety and more comfort.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray Guarendi.
I just love your show.
You are really smart. And I just appreciate your humor and your choice of music.
The more I mess up my own life, the more I am discontent in my existence.
Thank you so much for taking my call. It's such a treat to talk to you.
Well, I don't know about that.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm speaking to the most humble man in the world, I found out.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
Severe drought is creating a crisis of malnutrition for more than 20 million people in Africa. Join Cross Catholic Outreach and help feed these suffering children and families. Your support will equip African priests, nuns, and Catholic ministries with the life-saving resources they need to serve the poor. Get more information at 866-765-4280, 866-765-4280, or visit crosscatholic.org/AfricaFamine.
The Doctor Is In is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical, and in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
The mystery of death has troubled and fascinated humanity since the beginning of time. Our own experiences of mourning deceased family members and friends teach us the deep longing of the human heart for hope in the face of death. Many Catholics have lost a clear sense of how to face this experience with faith and peace. Planning funeral services in advance is not only a gift to our family and friends, but it is an affirmative way to embrace our own call to resurrection. Please take this time to call your local parish or diocese about pre-planning your cemetery and funeral rites. This message brought to you by Catholic Management Services.
Dr. Ray Guarendi providing on The Doctor Is In, psychological vaccine for Parentis Maximus Wimpus. That's a Latin name. Chronic or acute type. And if you don't have children yet, you still should listen, because you could be struggling with latent Parentis Maximus Wimpus brought about by the birth and raising of your first child. Delighted to have you with me. This is Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls, and Andrew Krucek grabs them, brings them up, edits them for brevity, and then I talk more about them because there's different directions I want to go in, or there are a broader material to bring up. In my opening monologue today, I talked about the idea that the link between vaccines and what is now called autism or autistic spectrum disorder or pervasive developmental disability or Asperger's syndrome has been heavily debunked by legitimate, decent studies, and that whole notion was brought about by a very, very limited, highly questionable, I wouldn't even call it a study, that this guy did way back. And it's been just thoroughly invalidated from many directions. Well, Sheila from New Jersey has a call related to this whole vaccine issue.
I sent a few emails. I've done a lot of studying on this subject, and I truly believe that there's a lot of harmful additives and what have you, and they give them too many too soon, all this. Now, there's two schools of thought, and there has to be a happy medium. So I found a book that shows how to scale back on the vaccines, not so much. When I've sent emails to my son and my daughter-in-law, they don't respond, which says to me they don't want to talk about it. So what I did was I mailed a book to my daughter-in-law on it. It was on the counter when I went in the house. No one said anything. I left it at that. I figure if they want to read it, they'll read it. I can't push any further, but it bothers me. It's very upsetting.
Sheila, you said something interesting there. Sometimes there is not a happy medium, dear. Sometimes there is a right and a wrong, an accurate and an inaccurate. By and large, vaccines have saved countless hundreds of millions of lives. They have virtually eradicated things that were at one time devastating to childhood. Polio. My mother had polio as a child. Tremendous stuff. There was a guy named Wakefield way back. Not way back. But this, by the way, Wakefield has since had his medical license removed. He had a 12-person sample where he came out with this idea that vaccines can be linked to autism. Since then, there have been 14 major studies looking at this. No link whatsoever. Okay? Now, at some point, you got to let go of conspiracy theories and say, well, you know, that's Big Pharma. Big Pharma, they're going to try to sell their stuff. At some point, and a lot of these things were done by NIH. So you got two points here. One, you may not be on the right track regarding the inherent danger of vaccines that have been in use for a long time. Okay, that's one.
So you believe, Dr. Ray, that they don't give too many, I mean, compared to what our kids got, they give 64 doses. I mean, at a very young age, you don't think that's too much too soon?
And what do you base that on? If you say, don't you think that's too much too soon, you're just basing it on your opinion. You're going,
I'm basing it on some documentaries that I've studied. And
Well, question here, sweetheart, that here's the problem. You got to know how to understand research. And so much of this is not research. It's anecdotal evidence. It's quote-unquote expert opinion. It is observation. It is people saying, well, gee, this chemical does this and this chemical does that. And you know that chemical is in these vaccines. You really got to understand how to interpret that. I would say this. From my perspective, and this is where I'm going to get in trouble, because I know a lot of folks in this audience believe this, and they say, Dr. Ray, there's research. Well, there's research, and then there's research. Given that, I would say that, by and large, the upside to vaccines dwarfs any downside. Okay? Flat out. That's the research. Secondly, very clearly, your daughter-in-law is saying something to you, and she hasn't said it out loud, but you want me to put these words in her mouth there?
I understand.
She's saying, shut up. And do you know why? Do you know why she could get so angry at you about this? You tell her, you be the shrink. Why would she react so negatively to you trying to be helpful?
Because I believe that you're on one end of the spectrum or the other. You either believe it or you don't, and apparently she doesn't. So she's saying it's none of your business. They're my kids. I get it.
And even further than that, even further than that, my mother-in-law is impugning my motherhood. My mother-in-law is implying that I don't care about the well-being of my children. This is a template that occurs a lot. And I've noticed it is more likely, in my experience, more likely to occur between mother-in-laws and daughter-in-laws. Somewhat between mothers and daughters, but more often between mother-in-laws and daughter-in-laws. Which is, mother-in-law has particular ideas on what is good for a child and how the child should be raised, how the child should eat, how the child should act, how the child should watch, whatever. Mother-in-law has those ideas. Mother-in-law tries to be helpful. She's not necessarily trying to be intrusive. She's truly concerned about the well-being of the child. Okay. Why then is this a source of rifts, sometimes really damaging rifts, between daughter-in-law or daughter and mother-in-law? Why? I mean, the intent is to be helpful. We both want the same thing. I'll acknowledge that. We both want what's best for the child. So why are you getting so upset with me? Because I'm just trying to help. Because it is interpreted as what you imply. You're implying. Now, I'm not saying that you're deliberately implying this. I'm saying this is how it's interpreted. You're saying that I don't want what's best for my child. That I am not a conscientious mother, a caring mother, a good mother. But that's not what I'm implying. It doesn't matter what your intent is. That's how it's being read. Well, Dr. Ray, I can't help how it's being read. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Because when you initially see that kind of reaction, Sheila got the reaction here. You know, she said, here's some books you might want to read. And the daughter-in-law said, hey, I'm not reading them. Keep them to yourself. Okay, that was a very obvious signal on the railroad track. Ding, 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 ding. The gate's coming down. Don't drive through it, Mom. Which is, I don't want to hear this. So don't try to find another way of getting me to hear it. Whether it's, well, I'm going to refer you to this thing on the internet. I'll forward this email to you that I got. Or this website. You might want to look at this website. Because the initial reaction was so intense that the message was, don't go there. It isn't a matter that I disagree, Mom, with your vaccine autism or vaccine whatever link, or these vaccines and these numbers are not good for kids this age. It isn't that I disagree with that. It's that I don't like what you're saying, even if you're not saying it. I think a lot of friction in families could be avoided if we were quicker to pick up on the message coming from somebody that says, just keep that opinion to yourself, keep that idea to yourself. These are my children. I'm going to raise them a certain way, especially with in-laws. You have a little more leeway to speak up maybe with a son or daughter. Okay, you're a parent, and there's a history there of 23, 24, 25, 26, 31 years. Got it. But keep in mind, that in-law's been in your life 1, 2, 3, 5 years, whatever. There isn't the history there. And therefore, the sensitivity may be directly related. No, wrong. Mathematically wrong. Inversely related to the number of years that they've been in your life. All right, this is Dr. Ray.
What can I say? I'm thrilled.
When
When a kid loses a tooth, it's exciting. But an adult has some serious decisions that needs a caring, faithful, and family-oriented dentist like Dr. Maddie with Advanced Dentistry Center. Here's what Dr. Maddie says to those that are deciding between bridges and implants.
While bridges only last 8 to 10 years and damage adjacent teeth, implants last up to 30 years and help prevent bone loss. Plus, they look more natural.
Extremely natural, with Dr. Maddie, who practices the art of dentistry at Advanced Dentistry Center. Conveniently located at 13 Mile and Telegraph, make the decision to call 248-594-9592 or click AdvancedDentistryCenter.com. Mention Ave Maria and receive 10% off dental implants. Be comfortable knowing that Advanced Dentistry Center's goal is to provide you with the most up-to-date treatments to help you look and feel your best. That's 248-594-9592.
A new director of stewardship and alumni relations is being sought for St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Ann Arbor, a growing 3,000 household parish. We are seeking a new full-time minister to join our team and to oversee and direct the important areas of stewardship and development for our parish and school. For further information, visit our website at stfrancisa2.com and click on New Director of Stewardship and Alumni Relations. That's stfrancisa2.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, a study claims that ecumenism is not a pressing topic for many Catholic and Orthodox Christian faithful. Could this be because perpetuating the division between them is not important to them either?
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
Dr. Ray-Garetti here on this Look Back Friday. The doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. My website is drray.com. A lot of stuff there. We're going to revamp that website. We're going to link it up a lot more with a Facebook page. A lot of the ideas that we bring up on the show, we're going to put on the Facebook page, too. I don't really like putting too much stuff up there that says, this is me eating a piece of cake, or this is me having fun at the golfing range. Nah. You have no chance for the humility award if you do that. This is something from C.S. Lewis. All right, I'm looking back at C.S. Lewis's work. He says, friendship is the greatest of worldly goods. Certainly to me, it is a chief happiness of life. If I had to give a piece of advice to a young man about a place to live, I think I'd say sacrifice almost everything to live where you can be near your friends. When I was, how old was I? About 33, something like that. My wife and I had no children yet. I was offered the potential of a job that was financially absolutely explosive. And this thing was multiple times what I was making. It was a job that would really within 5 years make me financially just very, very well off. It was in something that was my profession. It wasn't exactly what I wanted to do, but there was no moral problem with it. I didn't pursue it. Several reasons. One, I would have to travel 20 days a month. I didn't want to be away from my wife 20 days a month. Two, during those 20 days a month, I would be giving up an awful lot of what was dear to me. I loved playing softball with my friends. I loved it. I loved it so much I did it 2-3 nights a week. I would have had to give that up. I didn't want to do that. I loved doing things with the people that I cared about, my mom and my dad, on a moment's notice. Hey, Ray, you doing anything? Let's go eat. I'm with you. I'm there. FOMO, fear of missing out. As a result, as I look back on it, I have absolutely no regrets whatsoever that I didn't pursue that. First of all, I doubt that I would be here where I am today had I done that. Probably have more money in the bank, but so what? I've had chances to relocate. I didn't want to. I didn't want to leave my family.
I didn't want to leave lifelong friends, people I've had for friends for 40, 45, 50 years, childhood friends, still in my life. I couldn't replace that history. I just couldn't replace it. Now, some people are forced to move. I understand that, and that's hard. But some people choose to move for a job that pays $4,000 more a year. I never understood that. I didn't. To me, as Lewis says, those connections, that history, those people that you've shared so much with over the years. About a month or so ago, we had people over the house for a gathering. Some of my friends were there. One couple we'd been friends with since I worked at a grocery store when I was 16. Still my friend. Another couple I met when I was 19, playing softball. Met them. Another couple I met when I was 23 and we taught CCD together at the Newman Center in Kent. All still there. All still my friends. As we've gotten older in life and raised our children together and our children are all grown and gone. Yay! Sorry. that was just kind of an involuntary little twitch there. I agree with Lewis totally on this one. Totally on this one. The friendship and the connections are among the greatest of worldly goods. And you are my radio friends. I appreciate that. Without getting too schmaltzy on this whole thing, I do appreciate that. Monday, hopefully we will have E-Person Monday. In the meantime, always walk with God. Hold your kids very tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Providing financial services where you matter most. That's Catholic Vantage Financial. We're a credit union with a reputation of doing things in the best interest of our members and the Catholic community. We believe in the shared values of integrity, respect, compassion, and care. Now serving Catholics in Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, St. Clair, and Lapeer counties. Visit MyCVF.org to learn more. That's Catholic Vantage Financial at MyCVF.org. Federally insured by NCUA and Equal Housing Lender.
The Wine Palace in Livonia is a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio. The Wine Palace is a family-owned business for over 60 years where customers come in for great service. The 9,000-square-foot store includes a humidor, specialty wine room, deli, and a rare and collectible spirits room. We have the largest selection of spirits in the state at the most competitive prices. Ask for one of the brothers, Cliff or Kelly, and thank them for their strong support of Catholic Radio. Delivery is available. Please visit the Wine Palace at I-96 in Middlebelt or at winepalace.net.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shields.
The Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. How many times do we say that? Unexpected death, unexpected serious illness, relationships broken, people fired from their work.